so nice to be back with you. It's so nice to be with ACM. There is no place like this place, anywhere near this place. So this must be the place, huh? Wow, and there is no organization like ACN. I tell you, I am so excited again to be with you. I have the privilege of being with a lot of organizations and of a lot of people and a lot of leaders. And I just want you to know, I have such a respect for your founders and for your leaders and for what they stand for, what their values are, how they prioritize adding value to me. I promise you, if you're a part of this organization, you are in one of the cutting leading companies in the entire world, and you ought to be really proud, really, really proud. So thank you. I always love coming and being with you, and I'm very excited about today. In fact, in my hotel room last night and this morning, I put my lecture on my iPad, and I'm very excited about what I'm going to do. Okay, let me sit down here and let's get acquainted. My name's John. Okay, what's your name? Wow, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. My wife, Margaret, and I have been married for 43 years. And we have 2 children and we have 5 grandchildren. I talked to her last night. All five of the grandchildren are at our home. They're spending the weekend with Margaret. They call her Mimi, and they call me Papa. Now, Margaret picked the names for the grandchildren when our oldest one's 12. And before Madeline was born, Margaret said, "What are the babies going to call us?" I said, "I have no idea." She said, "Well, I want them to call me Mimi." I said, "I like that." But she said, "I don't want them to call you Pee-Pee." And I said, "I agree with that, too. I don't want them to call me Pee-Pee." So they call me Papa. So anyway, I called down last night and talked to her and the babies, and they were having movie night and popping popcorn, and I felt real lonely, and so I got to talk to all of them, and so as soon as I'm done here, this week I've been in Winnipeg, Canada, Winnipeg, and I do Winnipeg about this time. I don't do Winnipeg in the winter. One time I flew into Winnipeg in February and the snow was 10 feet high. And I literally on the plane, I called my agent and I said, "We don't do Winnipeg in February anymore." But what a wonderful place. And I was in Vegas on Friday speaking, and yesterday I was in Atlanta, and today I'm here. And when I'm done here, I'm jumping on my plane and I'm going right down to Florida. And at 3 o'clock this afternoon, I'm going to be with the babies. And I can hardly wait. So you are the second most important audience I'll be with today. Okay. Got those babies. I love you. You know, grandchildren are God's gift to you for not killing your children. Yeah, you know, now, so for you parents, I'm just gonna say to you, let your children live. And if you have teenagers, I know sometimes it's a toss-up, isn't it? I mean, you know, kid, shall I let them live, shall I not? You know, let them live, because if you let them live, someday you will find out why you had them. You had them so that they would give you grandchildren. And when you have that first grandbaby and you hold that baby in your arm, you'll look at that child and you'll say, you'll look at this child and you'll just understand it's the most beautiful, most wonderful baby in the world. And then you'll ask yourself a question, why did intelligence skip a generation? I was at a large convention and I said that and I forgot that my son Joel was in the audience. As soon as I walked off the stage, he was back in the green room and he was waiting for me. And I said, Joel, when I was talking about intelligence giving a generation, honey, you knew I was just joking around, kidding. He He said, no, Dad. He said, it's okay. He said, it's okay. In fact, he said, I think you're right. And I looked at him. I said, you do? He said, yeah. He says, I think you're right. He said, you know, last week, Grandpa and I had that very same discussion. Wow. You got me good. Now, okay, I want to teach. Are you ready to learn? I want to teach. Let me just kind of give you where I am and what I'm doing today. Greg mentioned it briefly. I have a book. It really comes out next Tuesday, next week. It comes out next week called The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. And people ask me, this is my 73rd book. And so people ask me, which that's no big deal. You just have to be old to do that many. So don't get too impressed. But people ask me all the time, they'll say, John, what is your favorite book you've ever written? And it's always my newest book, because whatever I'm doing right now excites me the most. Does that make sense to you? But I'm going to tell you something. In fact, I thought about this morning when I was just spending some personal time alone. I'm going to tell you, of every book I've ever written, this book coming out next Tuesday is the most life-changing book I've ever written for people. This book, listen to me carefully, will change your life, I promise you. Because I have had, since 1974, I have had a passion for personal development and growth. And so I finally decided, in fact, I woke up about a year ago, about 3:30 in the morning. I woke up, I was sleeping in a good sleep. I woke up, and immediately when I woke up, I realized that I should write this book. I put my robe on, I went downstairs, and I went into my office, and for the next 10 hours, from 3:30 to about 11:30 to 12, I sat with my legal pad and I just wrote as fast as I could write. And by noon, I had already listed what I know as the 15 laws of growth. And the reason I was able to do it so quickly, now of course it took longer to write the book, that was just the outline, but the reason I could do it so quickly is because I've been on a personal growth plan and a personal growth journey since 1974. And I understand personal growth, I understand personal development. And I finally said, it's time for me to put on paper, to put in a book, what I know works so well, has worked so well in my life. And so if you would allow me, this isn't going to be my most polished teaching or my best lecture as far as like professional, but that's all right. My name's John, and I'm your friend. But listen to me carefully. It's hot off the press. Listen to me carefully. I saved it for you. This is the first time I've ever given this teaching. That's for you. Yeah. So you're getting it first. So look at your neighbor and say, we're special. We get it first. Now, what's so much fun about what I'm about to do with you is you take good notes, and then what will happen is you, this weekend, rush to all of your friends and start sharing these things. And so next week when the book comes out and they start reading it, they'll say, you know, that's what my friend told me just a couple days ago. And then you'll just say, you know, I was with him in Charlotte and I just had a conversation with him and he stole all of my stuff. You're going to look so good. You're going to look so good. I cannot do 15 laws. Obviously, can't do 15 laws. This is kind of like my whole life on personal growth. And so I'm going to probably, I don't know, get four, maybe five in. I don't know. I'll try. I'll get a few in. But here, let me say this: the book comes out Tuesday. Okay, so what I want you to do is it's the 15 invaluable laws of growth, and I want you to buy it next week. And the reason I want you to, and I, and you say, John, are you asking me to buy the book? Yes, I'm pleading. Because if you buy the book next week, it'll make the New York Times bestseller list. Do you understand that, huh? And what I'll do is, when it makes the list, in fact, my publishing company have told me already, the pre-sales have already told me that we will make the list, and I just want you to put me over the top. And so what I'll do then is I'll go around the country for the next few months, and I'll say, ACN, put me on the New York Times. Is that all right? Is that a deal? Is that a deal? Huh? Is that a deal? So, hey, look at your neighbor right now and say, buy the book next week. Tell them that. Buy the book next week. All right. Thank you. Oh, I love it. Somebody says, don't buy a book, buy a box. I love you. And when I start teaching these laws, you're going to understand. You're going to understand why you need it. You're going to understand why the people you're developing in this business need it. Because when people ask me, they'll say, John, how can I build my business? And the first thing I always tell them is, you build your business by building you. You build yourself, and then you build your business. The first person you should lead is you. The first person you should grow is you. The first person you should believe in is you. The first person you should bet on is you. The first person that you should help is you. Now, that's not a selfish thing. Why I'm saying that is, if you get on a plane and they give you safety instructions, they say when the oxygen mask comes down, the first thing you should do is put it on yourself. If you have a child, don't put it on your child first. If you have an elderly person, don't put it on them first. Put it on you first. Why should you put the oxygen mask on you first? Because once you're taken care of, then you can take care of others. And once you're taken care of in your own personal growth, once you understand how to grow yourself, once you understand these 15 laws of personal growth, once you understand them, and once you practice them, and once you live them, and once you flesh them out, and once you begin to see how they help you, it will literally allow you to turn around and do the same thing for others. You cannot give what you do not have. You can't do it. You can start taking notes anytime. That's exactly right. And let me tell you, we teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. So if you want to reproduce unbelievable growing people within this organization, what you've got to do is you've got to become an unbelievable growing person yourself. And I'm going to do one more quick thing, because it's absolutely free, and that is, on October the 9th, I'm going to be doing a webinar all across America. It's free. If you just go to johnmaxwell.com, it'll give you the link. It's free. So, I mean, you can literally sit with your group. You can sit with some people you're trying to get into. If you want to help get some people in the business, sit with some people that you want to get in this business and say, let's watch this webinar together. It's on October the 9th. It's absolutely free. I think it's from 7 to 9, regardless of time zone. I'll be doing it to a couple thousand people in Atlanta. And you can watch me teach the laws of growth, and you can help have other people watch us. So that's on October 9th, johnmaxwell.com. Okay, now we've got that. As I teach you, I just kind of make sure the environment is right here. If you and I, if I wasn't speaking to 20,000 people, if I was just across the table with you at a restaurant, and you and I were having a dinner together, and if you said, John, we've got an hour and a half together, talk to me about how I could reach my potential, talk to me how I can be successful, then I would have the kind of conversation I'm going to have with you. So you have to understand, I knew I couldn't do all the laws, so I put some of them down here, and I'm just kind of like going to have a conversation with you, and I'm not even trying to motivate you, although this is going to motivate you. What I'm really trying to do is just be a friend of yours and kind of walk alongside of you, and if we could have one dinner together, what I'm going to say to you is what I would say to you. So we get to do everything but have the food. Because if I could walk into your life, there are two questions I would ask you. And these two questions will determine how successful you're going to be. And the first question I already alluded to when I was walking around on the stage a moment ago, and the first question is, what are you doing to develop yourself? What are you doing to grow yourself? And that's what this lesson's all about, how you grow yourself. And the second question I would ask you is, what are you doing to develop others? What are you doing to grow the people around you? Now, those two questions, what are you doing to develop yourself and what are you doing to develop others, are totally essential to your success. If you develop yourself, you will be a personal success. But if you develop others, you'll be a humongous success. In fact, the way I look at it is this. When you work on yourself, that's success. When you work on others and develop them, that's significance. And I would like for you to live on a level of significance. But you cannot give to others, you cannot teach others, you cannot develop others until you have developed yourself, until you've grown yourself. So let me give you a few of these laws of growth. And I'm going to, number one, the laws are, see, when I did the 21 laws of leadership, one law is not any better or different or any better than any of the law. When I did the 17 laws of teamwork, one law is not any more important than others. And the laws of growth, it's also true. When I give you number one, it's not more important than the other 14. It's just you have to start somewhere, okay? But this one's foundational. The first one that I'm going to give you is foundational for everything else on the laws of growth. And so let's go. Law number one is the law of intentionality. And the law of intentionality just simply says growth doesn't just happen. Growth just doesn't happen. In other words, if you're going to grow personally, if you're going to grow personally, it's going to be because you grow on purpose. Now, I did not understand this in my 20s. In my mid-20s, I was working hard and I had a real desire to be successful. And I had a man sit down with me at breakfast one day at the Holiday Inn in Lancaster, Ohio. His name was Kurt Kantmeyer. And Kurt looked at me and he asked me, he said, John, what is your plan for personal growth? And I didn't have one. But I was a very young leader, and as a young leader, I was embarrassed when I didn't know the answer. You know what I'm talking about? Now I'm not embarrassed at all. Now that I'm 65, I just look at people and say, I have no clue. It's so freeing to me, and it's so bewildering to them. But back then I thought I needed to know what the answer was. And so when he asked me what my plan for personal growth is, I didn't have a plan, but I told him how hard I was working, and I kind of tried to fake it. And I was like an airplane circling a field trying to come in for a landing. And I just kept going around in circles, and finally I didn't have anything else to say, so I just landed that sucker. And when I shut up, he looked at me and he smiled and he said, John, you don't have a plan for personal growth, do you? And I said, no. And then he said the words that changed my life. He said, John, growth is not an automatic process. You will not automatically grow. You will not automatically get better. It just doesn't happen. In fact, let me explain it this way. The only thing that is automatic in your life and my life after we are born, the only thing that we don't have to work hard at, the only thing we don't have to try to attempt, the only thing that's automatic after we are born is we die. You just hang around long enough and you get to do that. Paul Harvey said, you can tell you're on the road to success. It's uphill all the way. It's not flat. It's not downhill. It's uphill. And the only way that you ever climb uphill is to be intentional. And the only way that you're ever going to grow is to be intentional. And so I started off, here I am, I'm a young leader, and so I've started off, Kurt Kantmeyer says, John, you've got to grow on purpose. You've got to be intentional in your growth. So I went to all my friends for the next 6 months, and I asked them a question. I said, okay. I said, do you have a growth plan? Now, I asked that question 500 times. I know I did. 500 times in 6 months. Do you have a growth plan? Do you have a growth plan? Do you have a personal growth plan? And I found no one had a personal growth plan. Not one person. I had no one that I knew had a personal growth plan. And then I said, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Because I've got to grow. I could tell that he was right. Now, unbeknown to me, my father literally kind of put me on a growth plan when I was a kid. You see, my father, He paid, I'm the middle child. My brother's older, my sister's younger. He paid us an allowance. Our allowance was, we made our money at an allowance by reading books. And so my father, when we got to the seventh grade, we were required to read 30 minutes every day, and he paid us to read, and he picked out what we should read. And I had all my friends, they got paid to do chores. So I went to Dad one day. I said, Dad, all my friends get paid to do chores, and I think that's a good idea. I think you ought to give me my allowance on chores. And he said, honey, I won't pay you to do chores. He said, let me explain something to you. You're part of a family, and I don't pay you to be part of a family. He said, let's get an understanding here. He said, let's get an understanding. I don't pay you to be part of a family. I do things for you. Your mom does things for you, your brother, sister. We all do things. We're family. We do things for each other, and we don't pay each other to be part of a family. So I'm not paying you to do chores around the house. You do chores around the house because you're part of the family. In fact, he said, let me explain it this way. By the time you were born, you already owed your mother for 9 months of room and board. So shut up and take out the garbage. I'm not paying you to. In fact, he said, why would I pay you to take out the garbage? Unless I want you to grow up to be a garbage collector. He said, I put my money where my values are, and my values are you in reading good books. Now, unknown to me, my father put me on my first personal growth plan when I was in the seventh grade. Changed my life, changed my brother's life. And that's what I did for my children. That's what I'm doing for my grandchildren now. My grandchildren they all go on reading programs, and I pay them to read good books. One of the books that I read as a kid, read it every year from the seventh grade on. In fact, I've read it every year since the seventh grade on. It's a book by James Allen entitled As a Man Thinketh. It's a classic. It's one of the great success books of all time. In fact, I've read all the classics. In fact, I was going to Brazil, I think it was, a few years ago, and I was on a plane and I was reading a magazine which it was talking about the 25 most important books to read to be successful in life. And so I was interested in it, and would have the book and have a few paragraphs on the book. So I went through them, and then I thought, I've read most of these books. So I went back and I counted it, and by the time I had graduated from high school, I had read 19 of those 25 books. 19. And by the way, the only reason I hadn't read the other six, they hadn't been written yet. Now are you with me? And James Allen, in his book, As a Man Thinketh, it's only 73 pages. I've got it memorized because I read it every year. Here's what James Allen said. Most people want to improve their circumstances, but seldom want to improve themselves. Therefore, they remain bound. Most people want to improve their circumstances, but they don't want to improve themselves. Therefore, they remain bound. What James Allen was saying is, if you want things around you to get better, you don't need to fix the things around you. If you want things around you to get better, you get better. When you grow, when you develop, when you change, it's interesting because I do an awful lot of leadership stuff for an awful lot of companies around the world. And one of the things I do when I'm working with their top leaders is I look at them and I say, what would you do to change the company? What would you do? And they'll list all the things they would do to change the organization, maybe the values or whatever. And when we're done doing that, and I'll say, what is the most important change you need to make in your company? And they'll go back to the things they would want to do to change their company. And I'll look at them and I'll say, no, the most important change you can make in your company is you. When you get better, guess what? Your company gets better. When you get better, your family gets better. It all begins with personal growth. It all begins with self-development. It all begins with self-improvement. So what I want you to do on your paper or your iPad, whatever you're taking notes with today, what I want you to do is I want you to say this: the first person I should change is me. It's me. Now that is disgusting, isn't it? We'd rather change someone else. How many of you know somebody who really needs to be changed? You know what I'm saying? I mean, they really need to be changed. How many of you are sitting beside that person right now? You're just saying, oh, yeah, this person, oh, man, woo, why do you think I brought you here? Why do I think, hello, here we go. I mean, hello. And when Kirk Kattmeyer, by the way, Kirk Kattmeyer, this book that comes out next Tuesday, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, the first book when it came off the press, I had my office pull it off, and I signed it to him because he's the guy that got it started for me. And so I gave him the very first book off the press, and he lives in Columbus, Ohio, and I sent it to Kurt, and I said, thanks for getting me started. Now, the greatest gap in the world is the gap between knowing and doing. Are you with me? So here we go. I know I should grow myself, but I don't do it. And the reason that we don't do it so many times is because we have what I call gaps that keep us from what I know to what I do. For example, I had the knowledge gap. I didn't know how to grow. Remember, I went around and asked all my friends, how do you grow? How do you grow? Do you have a growth plan? I didn't know how to grow. It was a knowledge gap. Sometimes it's a timing gap. It's not the right, we say, well, it's not the right time for me to grow. One of the best parts of the book is in the book, I talk about the law of diminishing intent. And I'm just going to give it real quick to you right now because I don't have time to dive. You can dive when you get it. But here, the law of diminished intent says the longer you wait to do something that you should do now, the greater the odds are that you'll never do it. So I'll repeat it one more time. The longer you wait to do something that you should do now, the greater the odds are that you'll never do it. That's so true. When you know there's something that you and I should do right now, and we kind of put it off, and we put it off, and we put it off, and we put it off, the more that we put it off, the higher the odds are is we're never going to do it. We may talk about it. We may wish we would have done it. We may express disappointment that we didn't do it, but the longer that we put it off, and when I realized that I should start growing, I was tempted to say, well, I don't have a growth plan, and I'm not even sure how to do it yet. I've got this knowledge gap, and so maybe the timing isn't right. I'm just going to tell you right now, the time right now for you to grow is right now. Don't put it off. Don't say, well, you know what, I think I'll wait till I get a certain position and I'll start growing. I'll kind of wait till I climb to a certain level. No. Start growing now. And by the way, one of the gaps I had in this starting my growth was the mistake gap. And the mistake gap was the fact, well, if I start growing, I don't know how to do it really well. I'm sure I'll make some mistakes. Let me just tell you something. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. In fact, let me just tell you this. If you're going to do anything in life that's going to have potential for success, you're going to have a lot of failures. I was talking in the back green room a little bit earlier before Greg came out and your founders, and we were just talking a little bit about the fact that you make mistakes as you grow and you fail. The way to success is you've got to fail. That's why I wrote the book Failing Forward. It was a book that basically said, let me teach you how to fail correctly. How many of you failed at least once? Let me see your hands. Today. In fact, look at the person you're sitting beside right now and say, you're going to mess up. Go ahead and tell them that. You're just going to mess up. You're going to mess up. All right. Look right back at the person that said you're going to mess up and say, I already have. I'm sitting beside you. Boom, 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 boom. And whenever you're trying to develop yourself, whenever you're trying to grow yourself, there's a lot of trial and error. And in fact, when I wrote the 15 laws of growth, the reason I did it is because I thought I'm going to give people a roadmap so at least they can try to stay on course. But just here's what I want you to understand, because I want to go to another law. Here's what I want you to understand about the law of intentionality. Nothing good will ever happen to you in your life unless you do it on purpose. Most people get up every morning and they accept their life. They don't lead their life. And if you get up every morning and you just accept, you say, well, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to kind of hang today and see what happens. And, well, you know, easy come, easy go. Can I tell you something? If you go through life just kind of accepting your life, you'll never be successful. You've got to lead your life. You've got to get control of your life. You've got to make some decisions. And the most important personal success decision you will ever make in your life is the decision to personally develop and grow yourself. I want to challenge you today to be intentional about your personal growth, because I promise you that if you'll do this, 12 months from now, in fact, here's what you need to do. You need to take a picture of you today, because if you start personally growing, you won't recognize yourself in 12 months. You will not, hey, you'll think higher. You'll live better. You'll be more creative. I promise you, make this amazing commitment to grow yourself. So the law of intentionality, it all starts by doing it on purpose. Okay. Let me talk to you about another law, the law of the mirror, M-I-R-R-O-R. And the law of the mirror, this is, oh my goodness, I could teach you the rest of the morning on this one. The law of the mirror basically says, you must see value in yourself to add value to yourself. So when you look in the mirror and you see you, what do you see? Do you see a person of value? Do you see a person of worth? Do you see a person that has great potential? Do you see a person that was created for success? Or when you look in the mirror, do you see a person that's not worth much? Do you look in the mirror and do you devalue yourself? Or from a 1 to a 10, what is your number? Because the law of the mirror just says you must see value in yourself to add value to yourself. If you don't see value in you, you won't add value to you. If I look from a 1 to a 10, if I look in the mirror and I say that I'm a 3, guess what? I'll give myself a 3 commitment. I'll give myself a 3 effort. I'll only do what I can see as me as a 3. But as I begin to raise the value of who I am, then guess what happens? Can I say, if from a 1 to a 10 I see myself as a 3, I'm not going to bet on me. I'm going to want somebody to sponsor me. I'm going to want somebody else to bet on me. And the first person that should bet on you isn't someone else. The first person that should bet on you is you. Because if you wouldn't bet on you, why should anyone else bet on you? If you don't believe in you, why should anyone else believe in you? If you won't encourage you, why should anyone else encourage you? If you won't lift you, why should anyone else lift you? When you look in that mirror, what you see determines the value of what you put into yourself. When I teach the law of leadership, when I teach the law of the lid and the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership, I teach people that if this is how well I lead, this is my leadership lid, that my company can only come up, if I'm a 5 as a leader, my company can only be a 4. Well, that's not only true in leadership, that's true in the law of the mirror. In the law of the mirror, basically, if I see myself as a 3, I don't see myself in a good light, and I don't value myself, and I don't believe in myself, then all I'm going to be able to do is about a 2. I can't do a 7. I can't do an 8, because I see myself as a 3, and how we see ourselves is what we become, and what we become is the result of how we value us. And that's not only true of us, but that's also true of others. To build a great team in this business, you've got to value people. You've got to believe in people. You've got to believe that they're the most appreciable asset around, and you've got to pour yourself into them. But if you don't value people, you won't pour yourself into people. If you don't value people, you won't give your best to people. If you don't value people, you won't unconditionally love people. So when you look in this mirror, what do you see? Because what you see is what you get. Oh, I wish. I don't know. If I could do anything probably for anybody, I would walk into their life and I would just help them see themselves not only as they are, but as they could become. Because I'm a person of faith, and I'm not trying to put my faith on you, but I'm telling you, God created you in His image, and God created you in His likeness. And listen to me, God created you for success. I mean, think about God creating you, period. I mean, hello. And then the fact that He not only created you and me, but He said, I create them with my likeness. I want them to be like me. In other words, if God could give you the name, he would call you Junior. Yeah. Yeah. Now don't get excited with that. I mean, don't go back to your friend and say, just call me God Junior. You're good, but you ain't that good. But what I'm wanting you to see is that God did create you for greatness. Let me say, if God believed you in you enough to create yourself, don't you think you ought to believe yourself in yourself enough to do something with who He created? You see, God's gift to you is your potential. Your gift to God is what you do with that potential. And when you look in the mirror, I want you to see a person that is designed for success. I can still remember my background for the first 25 years. I was a pastor, and I can still remember in 1971 picking up a book by Robert Schuller on Move Ahead with Possibility Thinking. And in the book on Move Ahead with Possibility Thinking, I still remember a statement that he said. He said, the greatest churches in America are yet to be organized. And in 1971, I'm 24. And you can tell I didn't major in math. And when I saw that statement by Schuller in the Move Ahead Possibility, that the greatest churches are yet to be organized, I can still remember reading that. I can remember barking that. And I can remember sitting in my chair and just tears starting to come in my, and I just became emotional. And I said, that means me. He's talking to me. I can build one of those great congregations. That was in 1971. Little did I know, 20 years later, I would have named in a book one of the 10 most influential churches in America that I was the pastor of. Little did I know that those words. Listen to me. Let me tell you, you have within you seeds of greatness. And don't let anybody take away those seeds of greatness in your life. You were born for success. You were born to reach those goals. Trust me on this. My name is John, and I'm your friend. And I'm here to tell you, I wish you believed in yourself as much as I believe in you. Because I have seen and I have watched and I have observed over my years. I know leadership. I know development. I have the largest leadership training organization in the world. We are now in 173 countries with our company Equip, and we've trained over 5 million leaders, and you ought to see the lives that are being changed and the people are being changed. And let me tell you something. You have that potential for change. This may be your first ACN convention. You may have been coming for all 20 years. I have no idea, but here's what I do know this. I know you have potential, and I know that you haven't yet hit it, and I know that you can hit it, and I want you to understand that if you believe in yourself, you have potential to do amazing things. So look at your neighbor and say, you can do more than you're doing now. Tell them that right now. Wow. In fact, look back at them and say, and it's about time you started doing more than you've ever done before. It's about time you got there. Oh, yeah. All right. You're so beautiful. You're beautiful. I want to give you another law. Can I give you another law? I'm just skimming them. I'm just skimming. I can't dive with you, but that's okay. Next week you get the book. And you dive. Every speaker ought to come to an ACN convention. If he or she can't speak here, they have no gift of speaking. You understand that? That's a fact. Law number three, the law of consistency. The law of consistency. It's not a sexy word. Nobody ever got overly excited by, he's consistent. Well, she is so consistent. No, it's not a sexy word, is it? Mm-hmm. But the law of consistency says, hang on, motivation gets you going, discipline keeps you growing. Oh, yeah. I know what you're thinking already. You're saying these laws are really good. Trust me, they're really good. They're better than you think they are. I know I wrote the book. I know because what I am giving to you, I, since 1974, have been living. The law of consistency, motivation gets you going, but discipline keeps you growing. People ask me all the time this question. They'll say, John, could I spend a day with you? And whenever they ask me the question, could I spend a day with you, I always say no. And then I tell them why. They don't want to spend a day with me. You would be absolutely bored spending a day with me. Because what you would find if you spent a day with me is you would find that every day I do the same thing. And you say, John, why do you do the same thing every day? Because I understand this law of consistency. I understand that it's one thing to come to an ACN convention and get motivated. I mean, I watched back here in the green room, all these people coming up that you were honoring that have been so well and have done so well and been so successful, and you get motivated and you just say, I'm going to go back home and I'm just going to tear up the packs and I'm going to just go crazy here. See, you come to a place like this and you get really motivated, and I think it's a wonderful thing to come here and get really motivated, but you do understand something, don't you? It has nothing to do with your success. Motivation gets you going. Discipline keeps you growing. The question isn't how good do you feel now? The question is when you go home, do you do all the things that you got to do to be successful? Consistency. Oh, yeah. You see, I've written over 70 books, and people say, dear God, John, how have you written over 70 books? It's very simple. One word at a time. So I've done it. I've never been able to look at a page and just go, be filled. Fill up page. No, I get my legal pad out and I get my four-color pen, black, blue, red, green, and I do basically what they teach you in kindergarten with crayons. And every day I write. Every day. And you say, John, when you mean every day you write, what do you mean every day you write? What I mean is every day. All right. You see, if you wanted to spend a day with me, you'd have to sit over there in my office, and you just have to watch me write. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm writing. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not entertaining you. I got to write. Every day I write. Every day. Every day I write. Every day. You see, I've been doing leadership. I've been teaching leadership since 1976. I've been writing books since 1979. I've been developing resources since 1984. In Malcolm Gladwell's book, he talks about the fact that if you want to be good at something, you've got to do it over 10,000 times. Malcolm's a friend of mine, and him and I were, when we were discussing that, I said, my goodness, 10,000 times. I said, I wonder how many times I've spoken. So I went back and did some research, and I've spoken over 12,000 times. I mean, I'm sitting here on the bar stool. I've got my water here. I got my little note card here, got my iPad here, got my rubber band to put around my cards here, I got my little cough drops here. I'm as relaxed as can be. I'm not nervous. People said, you get nervous before you speak? No, not really. I'm just John. I'm your friend. But can I tell you something? The first time I spoke, I was not only nervous, I was bad. Oh, I was real bad. Oh, I mean, you say, you're just being modest. No, I'm being honest. You see, I had a friend in college. We were both theologues, and my friend in college was going to go preach his first sermon, and so I went with him, and he was very nervous, and I'll never forget it. It was the worst sermon I've ever heard in my life. He was terrible. He got behind the pulpit, and he forgot everything he was going to say. So he looked out at the 27 people that were there, and he'd say, God help me. And he'd try to pick up something, and he'd say a couple words into it, God help me. And then he started sweating, and God help me. God help me. God help me. Oh, God. And I'm his friend. I'm on the front row, and I mean, after about a minute of God help me, I'm on the front row, and I'm saying, oh, God help him, God help him, God help him, help, help him, help him. And let me tell you something. Can I tell you something? God didn't help him. It was terrible. I mean, for 3 minutes, all he did is sweat and say, God help me. All he did, sorry. And so now we're driving back to college, and it's quiet. It's quiet. No one's saying anything because there is nothing to say. I mean, we're just going back very quiet. And I went to my dorm, and I said, oh, my goodness, because I was going to speak the next week. I wish I would have never seen him speak. So here I am. Okay, so now I'm in a panic because I know that God help me doesn't do it. Right, it's got to have a little more content, a little bit more depth, a little bit more width than just God help me, God help me, God help me. So I said, I'm not going to run out of things to say. So I just started writing. I said, I developed my sermon, and I'll never forget my outline of my sermon. The first point was sin. The second point was salvation. The third point was reading your Bible. The fourth point was prayer. The next point was sharing your faith. Basically, I decided to speak on the Bible and all that is within it. And I took Margaret, because we were engaged, we weren't yet married, to hear my first message. And I said, honey, I just really want to go longer than 3 minutes. My goal is to go, I got two goals. Don't go longer than 3 minutes, and don't say, God help me, God help me, God help me. And so I preached, and I felt pretty good because I could tell after a while I had gone longer than 3 minutes, and I didn't say, God help me, one time. And when we got done, I'm now driving, and Margaret's in the car, and it's quiet. I thought, ooh, that's deja vu. Or in my case, I was so bad, it was deja poo. Finally, I broke the silence. I said, well, Margaret, how'd I do? She said, well, you went longer than 3 minutes. That is not a resounding good job, baby. I said, I thought I went longer than 3 minutes. I felt pretty good about that. I said, how long did I go? She said, 55 minutes. Let me put it this way. If you would have seen me 30 years ago, not only in speaking, but in writing, if you had read my first book, oh, it's still in print. In fact, a lady brought it up to me the other day and said, this is your first book. And I looked at her and said, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my first book. She said, I love this book. And I go, you do? Oh, she said, I love this book. Then I got bold. I said, well, tell me, what do you love about the book? Oh, she said, the short chapters. The short chapters. She said, you know, you have 100 pages and you have 33 chapters. Three pages a chapter. She said, I love it. Just short chapters. She said, what made you think of just doing short chapters? I said, lady, it was my first book. You don't understand? I didn't have the ability to go beyond 3 pages. In fact, in some of my chapters, they were 2 pages too long. It was my first book. You see, if you read my first book, if you heard me my first speaking, can I tell you something? If you would have seen me when I started, you would be so encouraged. You'd say, oh, he was so bad. There's hope for me. Consistency. Consistency. You just keep doing the right thing over and over again. In fact, I'm just going to give this to you. I don't have time to teach it. But just, there are three in this chapter on consistency. I have 3 personal growth questions that I make you ask yourself about consistency. The first question is, do you know what you need to improve? That's so essential. Do you know what you need to improve? And I talk about 2 things. What you need to do is you need to improve yourself, which are your choices, and you need to improve your skills, which are your abilities. I need to work on the choices. What choices am I making in my life that I need to improve? What skills do I need to work on? The second question is, do you know how you need to improve? Do you know how you need to improve? Because there are a lot of people that say, I need to improve, but they don't understand it's a daily thing. The how is in the fact that I need to do it daily and that I need to take it in small steps. I don't need to do big steps. I need to do small steps. We overestimate the what we can get done in a day. So I need to take, and then I ask the third question, do you know why you want to keep improving? That you see, there are a lot of people, they desire want power. You know, they're willpower, but what you got to do is you got to have why power. Willpower is about discipline, but why power is about motivation. And the why power gets you going. The willpower keeps you going. Do you know why? Oh my goodness. Consistency. Let me give you another law. What I'm doing is I'm skimming, because if I skim good, I can maybe give you 5 laws, okay? And I'm just trying to give you a few, because you're going to get the book anyway, right? Yeah, you're going to get the book. Look at the neighbor and tell him, you are going to get the book, right? I mean, you are going to get the book. In fact, I want you to practice encouraging your neighbor right now. Say, I'll buy the book for you. Law number four, huge law. This law maybe changed my life more than any other one. The law of environment. The law of environment says growth thrives in conducive surroundings. The law of environment basically says that what you and I need to do, if we're really going to grow, is we need to create within us an environment that is conducive for our growth. It's one of the reasons I'm so glad you're part of ACN. ACN is an organization that is conducive for growth. You do know that, don't you, huh? I mean, it is absolutely, it is an incubator for leaders. It is a crock pot to marinate you for growth. You do understand that. And by the way, isn't it fun to come here and to be with other ACN people because you're all on the same page, you all have the same values, you have the same priorities, huh? And you just grow. You just take off. It is so much fun because you're sitting beside people that are just like you. And isn't it fun to leave all those people back home, at home? Now you have to understand, when Kirk Kantmeyer told me that I needed to start growing myself, and I understood he was correct, and that I needed to be intentional, you have to understand, I was already in a deficit because the people I was around and the organization that I was in was not a growth conducive environment. Remember, I told you, I went around for the next 6 months and asked everybody, do you have a personal growth plan? Nobody had a personal growth plan, nobody. I mean, nobody was on a personal growth plan. Nobody was wanting to develop themselves. In the organization that I belonged to in the beginning, when I started my growth, their idea of progress was moving backwards slowly. So I had to create my own growth environment. And I have one of the most prized possessions is right here. It's a laminated card that I wrote. The words on this card I wrote in 1976. In 1976, I realized that I was going to have to create my own growth environment because I didn't have one. I didn't have friends that were growing. I wish I could be like, my wife has a wonderful friend in the Palm Beach area who literally every year goes on a vacation with friends of hers that she had from the first grade. And from the first grade on, they've been friends. And they go together, and Margaret and I talk about how wonderful it would be. And I don't have any first grade friends like that. In fact, I only have one college friend that I still hang with. Just one. Because, you see, my friends didn't want to grow. And I found that they not only didn't want to grow, they wanted to keep me from growing. You see, what I found about average people is average people want you to be average. And so therefore, if you start to get above average, average people get nervous. And they're like my buddy who hunts crabs on the eastern seaboard. I don't think he hunts crabs. I think that's the wrong term, hunts. I mean, I don't think you go out, bang, got a crab, bang. He didn't hunt them, he catches them. But he you know what he told me? He said, when you get two crabs in your basket, you don't even need to have a lid on. I said, what do you mean you don't need to have a lid on? Because they have those pinchers, they can crawl right out. And he said, no. He said, when you put two crabs in a basket, one crab won't let the other crab crawl out. And if one crab starts to crawl up, the other crab will grab the pinchers and pull it back down. Oh, I said, I've never been crab catching. But I understand the crab thing about one, because that's what my friends were. Every time I try to get out of the basket, they'd grab hold of me and want to pull me back down. Do you understand this? Do you have anybody like this in your life? Oh. So I had to go, you know what I had to do? I had to go get new friends. So as a kid, still in my 20s, one day I sat down and I said, okay, Maxwell, you're going to have to produce your own growth environment. And the words I put in 1976, I've never changed from that time. And I'm going to give them to you right now. A growth environment is a place. Number one, a growth environment is a place, number one, where others are ahead of me. Did you get it? In other words, for me, a growth environment is a place where the people I'm around, some of them are faster than I am, and they're better than I am, and they're smarter than I am, and they're more successful than I am, and they're quicker than I am. That's very important for me. In fact, let me explain it to you this way. If you're at the head of the class, you're in the wrong class. If you're at the head of the class, you need to get out of that class real quick, because see, when you're at the head of the class, then you're telling everybody and showing everybody how good you are. And I learned a long time ago, when you're in the show and tell mode, you're not growing. So if you're at the head of the class, you're in the wrong class. You need to get somebody that's smarter than you. You need to get around people that can challenge you. Didn't you kind of feel challenged a little bit ago when all these leaders began to come up on the stage and they began to be honored? And then you kind of say, wow, that's where I want to go. That's what I want to be. That's what I want to do. You see, you don't want to be the head of the class. You don't want to be number one. If you're number one, you want to get out of the class real quick, because number one just kind of doesn't do much. They just kind of go around and wave at people. Number two, a growth environment is a place where I'm continually challenged. Yes. Every day I get up and I have to just kind of suck air, because I've got a challenge in front of me, and I've got some goals I've got to achieve that are bigger than me. I'm continually challenged. Number three, a growth environment is a place where my focus is forward. My focus isn't yesterday. Yesterday's over, friend. I had a sign in my office that I kept for years that I loved. It said, yesterday ended last night. Get over it, friend. Get over it. If your best days are yesterday, you're in trouble. If the best thing you did was yesterday, you're in trouble. A growth environment is a place where the focus is forward. Number four, a growth environment is a place where the atmosphere is affirming, where people believe in you and people encourage you, that encouragement is part of the norm. That's huge. And by the way, I'm going to help you here. I'm going to help you how to know when somebody needs to be encouraged, because sometimes you say, I wonder if they need encouragement. And so let me just kind of give you a hint of when to encourage people. If they're breathing, they need encouraged. And I want to have an environment around me where it's positive and it's affirming. Number five, it's a place where I am often out of my comfort zone. In other words, I can't settle. I can't be comfortable here, because there's somebody that's always challenging me and somebody's always stretching me. Hey, I'm over my head. Everybody needs to be over their head. Get out of the wading pool. And if you're over your head, I mean, you might as well get over your head, because if you're over your head, it doesn't matter how deep the water is, you're over your head. A growth environment is a place where I wake up excited. I can hardly wait. I can hardly wait to get out of bed. I can hardly wait to go do something, because I'm excited, because I love what I do when I do what I love, and I'm challenged, and I love it. Now that I'm 65, everybody wants to know when I'm going to retire. Hate that question. I'm not going to retire. Don't want to retire. Why would I retire? I'm doing what I love. I'm loving what I do. This is who I am. I'm not retiring. Hello? I watch people that retire down in Florida. Dear God, help them. Help them big time. Some of those people, the biggest thing on their agenda is what time their tea time is. I'd hate to every day wake up and the biggest issue of my life is, when do I tee a golf ball up? Now, I like to play golf, but that isn't my passion. And that isn't my life. I like to add value to people. I like to help people. And when they say, when are you going to retire? I tell them, I'm not going to retire. They say, well, you can retire. Of course I can retire. I don't need to work anymore. I've made a good amount of money. I do well. I got 5 grandbabies. I do well. But I don't need to work. I want to work. Why do I? I don't even know. I love my work so much. I get confused between what's work and what's play. I mean, there's times when I'm playing and then I realize I'm working. And there's times when I'm working and I say, well, I think I'm playing. And I don't know whether it's old age or just the fact that I love what I do so much, I can't distinguish between work and play. So I don't know when I'm working, I don't know when I'm playing. I'm just having a good time. And so I'm not a workaholic, I'm a work of frolic. But I've got the answer because people keep bugging me when I'm going to retire, so I'm going to give it to you. When I die, I'm going to retire. I really am. Yeah. Trust me on this. When I die, I'm retired. When I die, I'm not going to write another book. I'm not going to do it. And when I die, I am not coming back and speaking at an ACN conference anymore. When I am dead, I am going to be dead, and I'm not going to work anymore. But can I tell you something? Until I die, I think I'll live. And let me tell you something else. I not only think I'll live until I die, I think I won't get the two confused. Because I know a lot of people that are already dead, but it hasn't been official yet. My name's John, I'm your friend. A growth environment is a place where failure is not my enemy. I'm allowed to fail. I'm not trying to glorify failure, but if you're going to attempt great things, you're going to mess up. You're not always going to do the best thing. You're not always going to make the right decision. A growth environment is a place where others are growing. I'm not the only one. I'm not the oddball. I'm not like, dear God, what's he doing? Look what we're doing together. We're learning together. We're growing together. A growth environment is a place where people desire change, where people say, I don't want to be the same that I've always been. I want to make changes in my life. I want to be different. A growth environment is a place where growth is modeled, where it's expected. In other words, people around me, they expect me to grow. I mean, if they're growing, they expect me to grow. Hey, they flesh it out. They're the example of growth. They model it. That's what a growth environment is. Wow. I shared with you that when I got in that growth environment, one of the things I had to do is I had to leave a lot of friends behind. Every once in a while, I pull out this very humorous card to me. It's called They Walk Among Us. I had some friends like this. See if you relate. One day, I was walking down the beach with some friends when one of them shouted, look at that dead bird. Someone looked up in the sky and said, where? They walk among us. While looking at a house, my brother asked the real estate agent which direction was north because he explained he didn't want the sun waking him up every morning. She asked, does the sun rise up in the north? When my brother explained that the sun rises in the east and has for some time, she shook her head and said, oh, I just can't keep up with that stuff. They walk among us. My sister has a life-saving tool in her car designed to cut through a seat belt if she gets trapped. She keeps it in the trunk. They walk among us. I used to work at a technical support for a 24/7 call center. One day I got a call from an individual who asked me what hours the call center was open. I told him the number you dialed is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He responded, "Is that Eastern or Pacific time?" What should we say? They... I couldn't find my luggage at the airport baggage area, so I went to the lost luggage office and told the woman that my bags never showed up. She smiled and told me not to worry because she was a trained professional and I was in good hands. Now she asked me, "Has your plane arrived yet?" And some people wonder why they ought to get some new friends. Aren't you glad you got friends like you got here at ACN, huh? Isn't that fun? All right. Let me see here. We're doing so good. Do you want another law? All right, here we go. Okay, here's another one. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad I have time for this one. This is the law of reflection. And the law of reflection says, this is huge. Learning to pause allows growth to catch up with you. Learning to pause allows growth to catch up with you. Wow. In other words, when you're growing and when you're developing, you need to call timeouts so you can begin to ask yourself, what am I learning? We've all heard the expression, experience is the best teacher. It's not true. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. If experience was the best teacher, then as we got older, we'd get better. And I know a lot of people getting older, and they're not getting better. Are you with me? So people glamify. I don't think that's a word. Glamify. Boy, it should be a word. I need to write that down. Glamify. I've always done words. When I did the laws of teamwork, I called one of the laws the law of countability, and my publisher said, "It's not a word." I said, "It is now." And then I asked him, "How do words become words?" Somebody has to say they're a word. I declare it's a word. Just amazing how we get intimidated by people. You know what I'm saying? Just step out. But we just look at experience and we just think it's amazing. Well, I just need some more experience. If I just get some more experience. No, not necessarily. I know people are getting more experience all the time, but they're not getting any better at all. Experience doesn't help you unless you evaluate it. That's why when I would take my kids on a trip, and now that I take my grandkids on a trip. Like I sat down with Hannah and Maddie the other day. They're going to be 13 next year. And I told them a couple things. One, I said, "That's it." And they said, "What do you mean, that's it, Pop?" I said, "That's it. No more birthdays after 13. That's it. Papa is putting a cap on you. 13's it." Maddie says, "But who's going to drive you around when you're old, Papa?" I said, "Okay, 16. That's it. Whenever I take the babies, in fact, that's what I was telling Hannah and Matt, I said, "Now when you turn 13, Mimi and Papa will take you to any city in America you want for 3 days. We'll just have a Mimi Papa U trip, and you just kind of pick the city. So they've got a year to kind of figure out where they want me to take them and Mimi. But whenever I take my grandbabies on a trip, as I did my own children, and whenever I'm with my staff and we go to a conference like this, I always ask them two questions. What did you love most about the conference, and what did you learn? What was the most important thing you learned? What's the most important thing you did? Wow. Evaluate your experiences. For example, I'm going to give you a perfect law of reflection right now. Now, I've been teaching for some time, but you've been here now, and you've been having some great teachings and great experiences. If I were sitting where you were and I was writing these laws down, or even when I get the laws of growth book, every time when you get that book and you get over there and there's something that you're reading that you need to apply to your name or to your life, just put in the margin, put a letter A, and just kind of mark brackets around it and put the letter A there. And then if there's something you need to change because you read something or you hear something in a conference like this and you need to change it, put a letter C over there in that margin and put blocks around, okay? I need to change this. If there's something you need to teach someone else, put a letter T. I need to pass this on to someone. There's some people in my group that aren't here. I need to teach this to them. And after you finish a chapter of a book, I've done this for 30 years, friends. It works. After you finish your chapter, go back to your A's and put them together. Categorize your A's, categorize your C's, categorize your T's, and then prioritize the A's, prioritize the C's. Of all the things I need to apply, what's most important? Of all the things I need to change, what's most important? Of all the things I need to teach someone else, what's most important? Now you've got an ACT act. Oh, by the way, it's huge. It's huge. I've done it for over 30 years. Whenever I listen to somebody teach, I'm putting an A or a C or a T over in that margin. And then what you do after you categorize and prioritize those A's, C's, and T's, then you look at number 1A, number 1C, number 1T, and for the next month, every day, you apply it, you change it, and you teach it. Every day for a month, apply it, change it, teach it. Apply it, change it, and teach it. And when you're done with the first month, go back to the second, number two C's, number two A's, number two T's, and you do the same thing. It just literally puts you on a growth plan. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I have 11 minutes, and I just jumped away from that law because it's a great law, the law of reflection, but we don't have time enough right now to reflect on that law. So look at your neighbor and say, he would like to teach more on it, but we don't have time to reflect on it right now. Go ahead and tell your neighbor that. Okay. So let me give you, I mean, you're just taking this in so good. I want to give you one more, okay? One more, okay. And I can't do any more than one, but I'm going to do one more. And I'm just excited because I just do one more with you, okay? And then I'm done. And you got to understand, I'm going real fast because I know next week you're going to get the... Thank you very much. And I'm also doing it very fast because you're smarter than most of the organizations I speak to. You understand that? So just look at your neighbor and say, we are smarter than most people. Go ahead and tell them that. And because you're so smart, I'm going to give you one more law. Here it is. The law of expansion. And the law of expansion says growth always increases your capacity. It always increases your capacity. In fact, you don't know what your capacity is. But it's more than what you are right now experiencing. It's the old Nike slogan. In the area of growth, there is no finish line. You see, in 1974, when I started my growth plan, I thought, okay, I'll be on a growth plan for a year or two, and then I'll be done, and then I'll go on to something else. What little did I realize that in 1974, when I went on a personal growth plan, that every year since that time, I would be on a personal growth plan. And I'm still on a personal growth plan, because here's what's wonderful about growing. When you start growing, the more you grow, the more you know that you don't know. Oh, yes, yes, yes. You want to, listen, you don't, oh, I wish I had time to teach this. So there are people that say, well, I'm a goal person. Now, I've hit a lot of goals in my life, so I understand goal setting. I understand this, but I'm not a goal setting person. I am a growth person. If you set goals, when you reach them, you have a tendency to want to settle and celebrate. But if you're growth conscious, you hit all the goals in your life, but you just keep growing because you know that you still haven't reached your capacity. Here's what they say. Researchers tell us that you and I only reach about 12% of our potential. Ah. 12%? Look at your neighbor and just kind of disgustingly say, you're just a 12%er. 12%. Wow. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? That means, that means you got 88% you're not touching. Oh, now see, most of us would like to think we are 80% reaching our potential and we only got 12%, and we say, oh, that's just a little bit out there. Ooh, I just got to get to that 12% so I can be a 100%er. But can I tell you, you're a 12%er. You got a whole bunch of sky above you, friend. You got a lot. You can't even see your ceiling on your potential. Do you understand? I mean, it's not like 8-foot ceiling or a 10-foot ceiling or a 12-foot ceiling. It's a high ceiling. You got a long way to grow. Look at your neighbor. Hey, look at your neighbor and just say, you got a long way to grow. Long, long way to grow. That amazes me. And that's what excites me. It excites me. Now, hold on, hang on, here we go. The question is, how do I tap that 88? How do I tap that 90%? That huge potential for me. I'm gonna give you the answer right now, because I've watched it, I've studied it, I got it. That 88% that's above you, as far as your potential for growth, the way that you start climbing that is doing two things. By changing how you think and changing what you do. You gotta think better and you gotta do better. And let me just talk to you briefly about how we think. How we think. We need to stop thinking more work, and we need to start thinking what works. Because activity is not necessarily accomplishment, my friend. And I know an awful lot of busy people that aren't successful. They're busy. They work hard. But they've never stopped and said, wait a minute, I've got to quit emphasizing working hard, and I've got to start thinking and asking myself, what works in my life? I love this. Let me read it to you. Dakota Tribal Wisdom says that when you discover that you are riding a dead horse, the best strategy is to dismount. However, in business, we often try other strategies with dead horses, including the following: buying a stronger whip, saying things like, this is the way we've always ridden this horse. Appointing a committee to study the horse. arranging a visit to other sites and see how they ride horses, changing the bylaws to specify horses shall not die, harnessing several dead horses together to increase your speed, declaring that no horse is too dead to ride. Oh, there's one that's getting a little too close at home in America. Providing additional funding to increase the horse's performance. Or how about this one? Promoting the dead horse to a supervisory position. You gotta change how you think. You gotta stop thinking more work, start thinking what works. You gotta stop thinking, hey, oh, this is huge. You gotta stop thinking, can I? And start thinking, how can I? Wow. You do understand there's a world of difference between those two questions. Can I suggest its possibility that you can't? How can I, says there's a challenge in front of me, but I can figure out how to get this one accomplished. Go from a can I person to a how can I. You see, can I just kind of throws it in the air and kind of, oh, can I, but how can I says, oh, no, it's a tough project, but there's a way to do it, and how can I do it? I got to figure it out. Stop thinking. Hey, stop. I'd love the applause, but we don't have time right now. Okay. Because I got to get this done. I got 3 minutes and 2 seconds. Stop thinking one door, in other words, one way, and start thinking many doors, many ways. Oh, my goodness. One of the things you discover is when you get through one door, that one door didn't get you where you wanted to go anyway. It just gets you to another door, to another door. It's a journey. And what can we do? What can we do? We need to stop doing only those things you have done and start doing those things you could or should do. Oh, yes. If I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I've always gotten. Number two, stop doing what is expected. I know I'm going very quick. I know you're writing like crazy and you're saying, John, you're going very fast. I know that, but it doesn't matter. You're going to get the book next week. Stop doing what is expected and start doing more than is expected. Wow. And stop doing important things every once in a while and start doing important things every day. Every day. All right. Let me talk to you from my heart just for a minute. I'm done. First of all, I want to thank you for letting me come again. I do not take for granted. I do not take for granted the invitation to ACN. Whenever your leaders ask me to come, I come because I want to make my time and my life count. And there's something about coming to ACN every time I'm with you that when I walk off stage, I really say to myself, you are receptive to what I teach, and you are going to take what I teach and do something with it. And there's nothing more rewarding to a writer or to a teacher like myself than to deposit this stuff in your life and know that you're going to take it and you're going to improve your life with it and you're going to improve your business with it. And so I always feel like when I come to ACN, there's a huge return as far as adding value to people. So I say that in closing. And so this morning in my hotel room, I pulled out one more card, and I read this in all sincerity to you, and I read this from my heart, and I read it to you because it's a Franciscan blessing that I want to give you. And you have to understand, I'm not trying to put my faith on you. So relax, take a pill. But in the same sense, I have that within me, and I thought how nice it would be maybe to close with just giving you this blessing. So Let me give you this blessing. May God bless you with the discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, exploitation of people, so that you may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless you with tears to shed for those who suffer from pain, rejection, starvation, and war, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and turn their pain into joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world so that you can do what others claim cannot be done. Amen.